So we have it. Hey, this is Diane, and it is Wednesday, July 26th. I'm here with a 1 o'clock group. So far, we have Brian and Melissa. So, Melissa, let's just pause it there. What I heard you say is that last time you were taking aim on using some different language, your son's having a really hard time this summer with self-confidence because his behavior hasn't been quite up to par, and he's getting a lot of negative feedback from camps and things like that, and so you've been kind of focused on that. Is there anything you would add to that kind of before we switch over and have Brian check in?
No, that sounds good.
Okay, cool. Brian, what's going on at your place?
I think pretty good. You know, it's always someone needs attention with five kids, but I think we're doing pretty good. You know, we've had a little bit of a late summer. I think malaise with a couple of kids have been pretty much video junkies the last couple weeks. But I think we kind of shocked them out of the routine a little bit this week and got them with some more outdoor activities. And it was so hot, it was really difficult to push them out of the house and, you know, go outside. It's only 115-degree heat index. Go have fun. So we've done some other things, and it seems to work pretty well. As far as my daughter, who I was really taking my aim on last time, this is my 16-year-old daughter, will be a junior in high school next year, had a couple of, I think, pretty good weeks. We had some fun. I got to go to Maryland with her last weekend for a lacrosse showcase, and then we are headed to Chicago via Des Moines tomorrow for another lacrosse tournament. And we're really just kind of working on not trying to solve things for her, but more as to providing sympathy and support, and realizing that while she's going into her junior high school and she's a very talented lacrosse player and also very smart, and you know, she's really starting to look at colleges and the recruiting process is underway. You know, she's really maybe more of a freshman in some areas from executive functioning. So this idea of how do I sort through schools, how do I respond to this attention, what am I really looking for in a school and the possibility of playing college lacrosse, we need to help guide her through that process. So, you know, I was really trying to work on consider the executive function that she's had, and then, you know, where can we add excitement, and then how can we support her, and still some struggles there. I think, you know, the hard part is the fact that you get contacted by these teams is sometimes really exciting, but it may not be the right college fit for you, and so it's kind of like, okay, well, let's sit back and think about what we're looking for and keep focused on that. And guide the process, because it's really easy to say, oh, yes, I'm interested here, and you've got, you know, 40 schools you're trying to deal with on that part.
Right.
So, you know, I think it's a work in progress, and I'll get to have a chance tomorrow as we do our drive to Des Moines. We'll kind of use some more tools to kind of narrow, really help her figure out what she wants to look for in a school, and as far as size and academic programs and those kind of things, and then what does fit.
So when you think about where you want to take aim today, Brian, what how does this fit in, the college search piece fit into the process?
I actually think I want to shift back over to my boys, my 11 and 13-year-old, and just kind of take aim on starting the fact that we're 3 weeks away from transitioning back to school, and how do we really help them be successful as one's in eighth grade, you know, getting ready to go to high school next year, and the other's going to be in sixth grade and transition to middle school. How do we set them up for success when they've both got a little bit different of a changed environment for them this year, and do some planning and thinking and just working with them to be ready to hit the ground running when school starts.
Okay, great. So setting them up for success with a new school transition.
Yep.
Melissa, how would you articulate where you want to take aim today?
Well, the one thing that I was going to ask about today, it kind of goes along with the words that we were talking about last week, but I think the one thing that's a result of a lot of the negative feedback that Tommy's been getting is that there's a lot of anger, like quick anger and impulsive behavior. And so I don't know if that's too big, but if there's some way I could take aim on working to get him more calm when something upsets him.
So what it sounds like is that you want to take aim on how to support him when he has an impulsive anger response specifically to negative feedback. Does that frame it for you?
Yeah, that sounds good.
Yeah, okay, cool, awesome. So I'm checking to make sure nobody else has joined us. So we are on, this week we're talking about transparency and openness. And it's interesting, Melissa, that you talk about anger and impulse control. I would say that when I tell stories about transparency and openness, and what it's meant for me as a mom, and then also kind of what I think I work with clients the most on, is just really around the idea of trigger management. And we just came up a lot last time in PSS, we were talking about kind of having trigger plans and that sort of thing. And what the first time I really kind of bared my soul with my kids was when I realized that I was yelling more than I wanted to. And we'd had a particularly rough night, and I kind of sat him down and said, the next day, and said, I don't know what happened. I said, I completely lost it. I didn't mean to lose it. I don't want to lose it as much as I'm losing it, and I need your help. And we all get triggered. Triggers are normal. But I really remember that moment so vividly because it gave my kids permission to engage with me in problem solving in a different way. When I made getting triggered normal, they went, oh, we can all work on this together. And it's not just mom trying to help me to do something differently. Or when I share with them that I'm having a really hard time with what's going on, and I know you are too, it's that willingness to be a little vulnerable as a parent that really does open the door for connection in a very different way. And I know a lot of parents are a little nervous about this one because we're afraid that we're going to lose our power, and have every confidence that you can find a way to, you know, be transparent, be open, be vulnerable and honest, to make those mistakes as you make them and still keep your power as a parent. And that's really the opportunity here, is because I think that the most powerful leaders in the world are actually the ones that can own up to what their own challenges are, make the mistakes when they make them, move it forward, help to shift it, and be really vulnerable and powerful as leaders. And it really does make a difference, even with our kids. So lots of stuff in this article that we wrote in the workbook, but I want to just pause there and say, you know, what comes up for the two of you as we think about this idea of being transparent and open?
Well, I really kind of like it as a great way to model stuff for our kids, because I think a lot of times they have this, you know, demand to be perfect and appear perfect, and I think it's much more so than it used to be in the, you call it the digital age or whatever, where they, you know, live their lives so openly and freely with, I guess, they don't use Facebook because that's not cool, but whatever, you know, all their other apps are, the Instagram and Snapchat and those kind of things, where they do so much that has more of a public aspect to it, and they're so caught up in who likes their story or who, you know, responded to it or somebody didn't. Does that signal there's something wrong? I just made a signal they're actually busy today and not tied to their phone, but I think the idea of sharing that we struggle with things too and we have to go through it, and as we let them know that that's okay and we have to go through our own process, it really helps them to be comfortable that they're going through their process and that they're going to fall short sometimes too, but what's really important is the work that they're doing and having a framework to respond to situations, and that it's okay to be, you know, your natural action to be upset or be angry, you know, when you've experienced failures or when you've been told you're wrong a lot of times, that becomes their default mindset, and that's okay to feel that way, and we need to work on how we can address it. But it's okay to have those emotions and those responses.
Well, it's interesting. You just added a new layer for me, Brian, because I think that you're right, and that somebody said this about Facebook recently to me, that you know, we don't ever put the bad stuff on Facebook.
There's no bad. Everybody's
same with
awesome.
Instagram. It's like, oh, look at this terrible looking cake that I made. It was a total flop. I mean, nobody
yeah,
does
yeah.
that.
My three layer cake that flopped over on its side.
Exactly. And so we teach our kids to do that. And so I think that might be an interesting, exercise to do with my kids, is to kind of say, you know, if you were going to share real life on Instagram, you know, what are you not sharing that shows, you know, all aspects of life? So I love that. Thank you, Brian. Melissa, what about you?
Yeah, I really like the notion of giving the kids like permission to help problem solve, because that's one of the things that I've been trying to do, and it was, I think, from one of the calls that I had or part of the Sanity School, was we're always trying to really get at the root of what's happening when Tommy's upset about something. And so we go through, you were like, ask questions, you know, like, what's really going on here? And so I think, like, opening up, you know, and letting him know that we're trying to help, and you know, giving him, opening that door for him too to let us help, and to, you know, that I like the idea of that, and because we try to do that now a little bit, you know, and work together, you know, just depending on what the situation is, but I like, you know, that he can see us, you know, the I need your help idea, you know, I think that would help him too, you know, to let him know that we're struggling too.
So is there a specific area, Melissa, where you think you could open that door with a little bit of openness and transparency?
I think so. You know, it's always hard to tell, like, what he's taking in, you know, because I think we've tried to tell him before that, you know, we're trying to help, and but, you know, we're learning too, and we, you know, we've told him that we don't know how to best help you yet. You know, we're still working on it, and you know, but I'm not sure, like, how much of that he really, like, absorbs, you know, that we're struggling. So maybe there's a different way that we could tell him, you know, that we're struggling, you know, to help him.
Well, and I guess what's coming up for me is the minute you say struggling, I think, oh my gosh, you know, there's that initial reaction that we have as parents that looks like, I want our kids to feel safe. I want them to feel like everything's fine. I don't want them to worry. A lot of our kids are empathic and really more sensitive kids. And so I guess, I don't know if that applies to you, Melissa, but it just kind of that sort of vulnerability and you know, is it a safe thing to do with your kids, or does it feel like a scary thing?
I think it would feel safe. I think, you know, the only thing I wouldn't want it to do was just, again, that he would think that it's his fault that we can't help him.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because he does tend to have a lot of self-blame, you know, so that would be the only thing that I could see would be the result of that, because he does internalize a little bit of that.
Yeah. Brian, is there a part of this that would be hard for you, or that you feel like would be a stretch for you?
Well, it's just always a little hard to let your guard down, right? And just, I mean, it's always a little hard to admit when you're wrong, and that's just always really hard to share your own imperfections, your own struggles, right? You, in one way, you want your kids to think you're strong and everything's always all right, and you always have the answer as a parent. And this there's a little bit of a different way of doing it. You're taking off that mask. And it's just human nature a little bit to not want to admit that you struggle or have challenges. And you certainly don't want this, you know, this one, I think the line here, you know, to be incredibly confusing for a child to hear his parents say one thing but watch her do something completely different. And you don't want to be a hypocrite in front of your kids. You know, she always talked to them about the importance of integrity and following through on your word and that kind of stuff. And so, you know, it's tough to admit when you haven't done that, you haven't measured your own expectations. It's wonderful overall, but it can be a little hard to do.
Yeah, yeah. So when you think about your guys, Brian, and this whole, you know, is there something in particular that you think would be valuable as you're getting ready to start school again? Where could you apply some of this concept?
Well, I think somebody should say, hey, you know, there have been times where I probably haven't focused on a project as much as I should have or prepared for something or, you know, really kind of, use the cliche, done my homework as much as I could advance, and I found myself in a bind. And I really wish that I would have done, you know, kind of bit off measurable steps to get myself there to rather than find myself in a crisis mode. And I think that's something can certainly be helpful for them and just, you know, kind of transition, okay, what habits are going to work for us this year to make it less stressful for everyone? And that's, you know, it's not so much about a performance in school that I'm concerned about. They're all really bright kids, and they're going to put into it what they feel they need to put into it. But I'm really thinking more of maintaining family harmony, you know, and having a good structure and support schedule together for getting out of the house on time in the morning and doing so with, you know, everybody actually having eaten breakfast and brushed their teeth, you know, and hopefully wearing clean underwear, you know, and showered once, you know, in the last month or something like that. Those kind of things, I think, are the systems I want to have in place just to, you know, they have this self-care routine and we have less stress in the home. And then have a system for, you know, how are we going to accomplish homework and what are the goals and expectations on what you'll do around the house once the school year starts, you know, what chores do you have, what responsibilities have, and all that's in addition to your just responsibility to be ready for school every day. That's your job, just like mom and dad have jobs and we've got to be ready for them and stay up on them. How do we do that? How do you do that? You know, especially the middle school transition for the sixth grader and the eighth grader, they both have some executive functioning challenges, and so looking at when they have some longer term projects this year, not letting those just sit to the last second. How do we create some excitement and create measurable steps to achieve it? What does a good success plan look like to get there in the next week?
Well, and so here's the thing, Brian, because I know you well enough to know that the practical aspect of this is your go-to. And what I also know is that you've got some other transitions going on in your household right now, and you're going to have one fewer kid going through the school dynamic. And so I just, like, what popped into my head is, you know, how does the transition with, you know, your oldest going off to school?
I was going to say, we don't have one fewer kid going to school. If that guy's not going to school, we're paying a lot of money for nothing, Diane.
No. I mean, one less kid at home getting ready for school every morning.
Yeah, and yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
So it's, you know, so I guess the question is there something around that transition as well that might be more connected to the emotion of it rather than the practical aspects of it as well?
I'm sure it's going to be emotional for everybody. I mean, I think everybody's going to kind of suffer it in their own way with having him out of the house, having the first one out of the house. I just wish, I mean, I don't know how we deal with that till it happens, that part of the emotionality.
Well, and I guess I'm wondering whether there's some, you know, is there some opportunity for transparency and openness around the fact that you don't know how it's going to feel until you're there?
And maybe
they already are feeling some of it. And so it's, you know, I'm wondering whether it's the, you know, is there an opportunity to give the other four permission to be thinking about what it's going to be like? And would it help them? Because you know they all have transition issues.
Yeah. No, I think that's a great idea. I like that idea of us modeling our approach to the oldest one leaving in 3 weeks to just how they deal with other transitions and being, you know, open with your emotions and your responses. It's a great way to pull a lot of different things together and share some openness in the home.
Yeah, cool. All right, so Melissa, I want to go back to your original question, and I don't know whether there's anything in today's lesson for that, but I want to offer to do a little bit of laser coaching around kind of how to handle his impulse control issues, if that would be helpful.
Okay, sure.
So was there anything in particular that kind of came out of this lesson that you think might be a place to kind of jump in, or do you want to go back to the original place you were taking aim?
Let's go back to the place I was originally taking aim.
Okay, so he's having these anger and impulse issues, and you said that what you really think is going on is that he's had a lot of opportunity to screw up, and he's a little bit, it throws him off balance, and it makes him more likely to get triggered. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
So what's... Yes. So what's underneath that for him? What's the trigger, really?
I think, honestly, a lot of he's really sensitive, and really the smallest kind of perceived slight, like if we're in a group situation, you know, if he thinks his friends are not including him as much as he should be included, or they're not talking to him, or he takes it really personal, and it's sort of an instant trigger for him, and it turns into, like, instantaneous, like, anger. And that's just, and, like, I can, you know, and we start that, like, asking questions, like, what's really going on, like, what, you know, and, you know, after a little bit, you can usually get him to tell you, like, well, my friends aren't talking to me. And, you know, like you can usually get him to tell you what's really going on, but his first response is always that anger. And
Yeah. So it sounds like there's kind of two pieces of this. One is, you know, so we always talk about prevention versus management. And so on the prevention side, you know, what's coming up is, you know, how he's in a difficult situation. How often are you really focusing on strengths? Do you have time every day where you know, spend time to kind of really tell him what you love about him, what great thing he did today to kind of really balance, you know, have more balance in his life of what's working and what's not. So he's not just focused on the what's not. And you can even turn that into a kind of a practice that you did as a family where I've had clients who do this where it's like everybody says one nice thing about everybody else at the dinner table or something like that, where you're all kind of engaged in celebrating and open that way. And then I guess the question is what on the trigger management side, is there something that you've done around trigger management as a family before that you think you could leverage again since he's a little bit more sensitive, or is it really kind of coming up with a trigger management plan?
I think it might be a matter of trying to come up with a trigger management plan because, I mean, there's several. I think we're still in the process of kind of working on what they are, you know, but it does come to about, you know, again, that he's really sensitive. So even if you say something, like even something simple, like getting, you know, the getting ready in the morning, like put your shoes on, well, you know, I would say about 99% of the time he doesn't put his shoes on the first time. You know, so you're saying it again, and then, you know, there's a little bit more impatience in your voice, you know, and then, you know, like, I'm trying, you know, is usually like the response that we get back, you know. So I think it would be identifying what more of his triggers are, which I think one of them he identified with that, so when we asked him about it, he had said, well, you're talking to me in a rude voice. And so,
right, so when you get impatient, it's a trigger for him.
Yes. So
yeah,
like,
well, that makes perfect sense. So what do you, if you know that, right, so there's the prevention and then there's the management. So how do you help him calm down? How do you, you know, all of that other stuff. But let's go to the prevention side of it. What could you be doing differently if you know that even just the tone of your voice is a trigger? What could you do to help him in this moment?
I don't know. That's what's so hard, because I feel like we always start off really good, and then it always takes like a downward spiral down, you know, when it's like, now it's time to go and you still have your shoes on, or, you know, it's like, we start out doing, I think, what we're supposed to do and being calm and patient. But, you know, after however long it is, you know, 15 minutes, 30 minutes, you know, then the patient starts to wane.
Well, and that makes perfect sense. So when you think about yourself in that moment, when he says he's getting triggered because your voice is raised, how triggered are you usually when your voice is raised?
Probably a lot, yeah.
So what if that's the place to start?
Starting with what our triggers are?
Yeah. And so I guess that this is a question. Do you start with, is it so hard to manage your own triggers that you really need to help your kids be a little bit thicker skinned? Or is there an opportunity to really focus in on your own triggers and to really try to stay more calm in the moment? Or is it a combination of the two?
It's probably a combination of the two.
So I'm wondering if this, going back to this transparency and openness thing, you know, is there an opportunity to have a conversation as a family and say, look, what I notice is that, you know, I get triggered when you're late, and then when I get triggered, you get triggered, and then we end up in a hot mess.
Right.
You know, how do we work on this together? And it's not just, you know, how do you help me stay calm? And how do you, because if he said, Mommy, I'm trying, in a calm voice, that would let you know that he's at least got it on his radar. Or if he, mm-hmm. you know, if he said, okay, I'm, you know, or if you, you know, you did something to kind of get his, make sure you had his attention. I mean, there's all these different angles to kind of approach this from, but I'm curious about just the idea of working together. How does that play out for you?
I mean, I like the idea of making him part of the solution and in working together to figure, you know, to figure it out.
What's the realistic? Go ahead.
No, I think, well, because I think, you know, like, because I think I told you when I first talked to you on our call that my husband has ADHD too, and so he knows what his triggers are, which actually being late is one of his triggers. He does not like to be late. There's a little bit of OCD mixed in there, I think, too. But and he said that, like, it makes me anxious to be late, you know, and he's literally, like, said that out loud to everybody in the family, you know, like, I don't like to be late. So I think we've been transparent about that. Then I think it's just like you said, it's the management. Like, how do we we've acknowledged that, and then how do we kind of manage it, I guess.
And well, because so there's two sides of that. So I know, you know, Dad says I get triggered when we're late. Kids mm-hmm. can interpret that as meaning, okay, so I better not be late, or how do we help Dad to deal with the fact that sometimes we're going to be late? Right, and so it's mm-hmm. it's the which is the safe angle, and so I guess the question is, how open do you think the family would be to kind of having that more? How do we want to handle these sorts of things?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like the whole idea of the openness and just, like, sitting down with everybody to talk about it, because, you know, even maybe his little brother would want to help him in the morning or something, you know, like, I don't know, you know, just like getting it kind of out there and, you know, to make it work a little better.
Yeah. Brian, what's coming up for you as we're talking?
That's the first part hit hard with that spiral of you get triggered, I get triggered, we wind up in this hot mess, and everybody loses their calm and loses their cool, and then, you know, we all feel bad afterwards, but our day's a little bit tubed from that there on. That part certainly hit, because that's happened a lot of times. So
what's the opportunity from your vantage point?
It's to admit that we, you know, the parent also has that issue sometimes, and so how do we both need to address a solution, and maybe we have some kind of code word that we say, or maybe we have to give each other a hug in the middle of it, because it's really hard to, you know, be upset if you're hugging each other or something like that, or you say something that makes you both laugh. It's just part of that's admitting that we struggle with it and then letting them see our process. And if you model it and say, okay, I'm starting to feel a little bit triggered, I need just to stop for a second and take a breath or count backwards for 10, or I'm going to try to get my breathing back regularly with my heart rate and find my center, then maybe they follow suit and it de-escalates the situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So everybody, you know, everybody in your corners, you know, whatever your trigger management tool is, you know, if yours is take a few deep breaths, if yours is go run around the house, if yours, you know, whatever it is, let's all go to our corners. And the code word is a great place, great thing to insert in this process. And say whenever anybody says rope, the one at Elaine's house was rope. Yeah, somebody's reaching the end of their rope. And whenever anybody hollered rope, everything stopped and everybody went to their trigger management tool. To try to calm down. So, cool. So, Melissa, how does that feel as a way to move forward a little bit?
I think good. I think some family conversations and some additional transparency.
Yeah. Well, and I love how you kind of combined the two. So, Brian, when you think about the boys in summer and summer being up and the new schedule and everything with the schools and either around the transparency issue or some other direction, what's coming up for you in terms of an approach to really set them up for success?
I think the idea of kind of doing a group approach, okay, we have this number of weeks and, you know, my default is to kind of solve the problem and implement a solution, but I know from experience it's probably better to let others participate in that when you want compliance and they need to be comfortable what they're going to comply with, but start talking, okay, you know, how do we want to practice and get ready for this, and what is a reasonable expectation? How much time do you think you need to get ready in the morning? And then maybe let's practice that and see if that's going to work. And, you know, what other things can we do to make that easier in the morning? And it's, one, having enough time, but it's, two, you know, we've done reward charts in the past where you get a reward for getting something done, and we found the better way is to give a reward for doing things without complaining too many times, right? Because if you're going to give them a sticker for or whatever it is, or give them points toward e-time or something like that for getting out of the house by a certain time, if that's a half-hour knockdown, drag-out fight to get there, it doesn't feel like you should be rewarding that behavior just because they managed to leave the house on time.
Hmm.
It should be, you know, you're gonna brush your teeth without, you know, by a certain time without complaining more than twice or something like that, right?
So can I challenge that, Brian?
Yeah.
Because it feels like there's a couple of steps there, right? So there's compliance without drama, And then there's compliance
yes.
without without reminders. I mean, so there's this, if you think about the scaffolding and all the steps, and so I think your instinct about checking for realistic expectations makes sense, and it may be that there are days that it's not realistic to expect that they're going to get out the door without griping. But they're, you know,
yep.
but trying to add scaffolding and once they've got the getting out the door with griping down, to add the layer of getting out the door without griping as a bonus
right.
can be really helpful. I guess the question probably for both of you is that around this kind of involving your kids in the conversation and the planning is to really ask what is a realistic expectation, giving your kids level of self-awareness, giving your kids level of engagement, it's summer, all this other stuff, you know, what, and I'll start with you, Brian, it's like, what is a realistic expectation for what the boys are going to be all in for versus what's going to feel like just one more thing Dad's making them to do?
I think that's something we need to kind of figure out together. I mean, I have an idea of what it is. They may say something very different. And if we're miles apart, we need to figure out why we're miles apart and how we bridge that gap.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I guess, so how willing do you think they will be to play with this with you? Because it sounds like that's really what you're suggesting.
Yeah, and I think they'll be willing to start talking about it. You know, it'll start getting a little bit. I mean, I think they're both genuinely a little bit excited about getting back to school and seeing friends more frequently, and you know, the next kind of academic challenge in learning. I mean, thankfully, they both actually really enjoy school. They make a plan with some aspects of it. They really enjoy learning, and so I think they're happy to get back to that. So I think it'll be exciting. For them, and as we know with kids with ADHD, excitement helps stimulate the brain and gets them going. So we just got to find a way to keep the process exciting.
So what do you think would feel exciting to your guys?
Well, certainly having some kind of reward or goal in mind, right? That's exciting. Can create some kind of reward system or bonus system. That's always exciting.
Cool. So is that something you create? Is that something they create? Something you create together? How do you get from where you are?
I think it's something we create together. I think it's something we create together.
Yeah. So, Melissa, I'm curious, you know, what do you think is a realistic expectation for your son's ability to kind of really engage in this discussion?
I think that he would be really interested in talking about it. I think he would enjoy being part of the process. I'm just not sure how interested he would be in the follow-through.
So what does that look like practically?
Well, maybe it just means like having the conversation more than once with him, you know, so it's not like just one family discussion, you know, on talking about, you know, how we, you know, how to problem solve or, you know, what we want to do differently, how we can work together, but maybe it's, you know, multiple conversations with him until he really starts to see like, oh, I'm going to be part of this decision-making process, or I'm going to help be part of the solution. You know, I think it might take a little while to catch on, but I think he would feel good about being part of it, of the process.
Well, and I know you said this earlier, you know, about this idea of giving kids permission to help problem solve, and what came to mind immediately was this whole you know, process that we go through from the time when we're telling our kids what to do to the time where mm-hmm. our kids are completely independent and doing what they need to do, and then they're just coming to us to help troubleshoot and kind of all those steps in between.
Mm-hmm.
This is a really foundational part of helping them to realize that they do have a role in problem solving And mm-hmm. and it's a something that happens over time and over years. And you're absolutely right that kind of even just problem solving in front of your kids is sometimes a baby step that you do that kind of gets them in the mindset of, oh, somebody has to actually solve this problem. I didn't know about that. Mom always just said, you know, I bring a problem to mom and mom says, do this, and that's all I need. You know, it's not, we aren't always transparent with the processes we use. And so I like this idea of kind of it bringing them into the problem solving process in a different way.
Yeah, I mean, and like you said, it definitely is a good skill for them to have. You know, my middle son doesn't have, you know, any ADHD or anything like that. And he, I can see, you know, like if he comes to me with something, like I can say to him, like, something like that, like, well, what do you think? Or how would you fix it? Or, you know, and he's really, you can see in his eyes, like he's really excited if he finds a way to fix whatever it is he needs or, you know, find what he needs or, you know, that he came up with a solution by himself without saying, you know, just coming to me and me fixing it or solving it for him.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense. Cool. All right. So let's shift a little bit and I'm going to pull up our four questions and just kind of move to kind of checking out and not checking out, but, you know, like ending wrapping up our call. And so the four questions are on page 64 today, I think. 63. And so what did I focus on or pay most attention to today? What's my clarity or takeaway? What's an aha that I had? What's a realistic action step for me to take? And how do I set myself up for success with this action? So take a minute, jot down a few notes. And I'd love to hear from both of you, at least an aha and an action item. Whenever you're ready.
What was the second one, the second question?
What aha? The second one was what aha did I have? Is that the one you're missing?
No, I have aha, action step, and set up for success. Maybe I missed the first one.
What did I focus on? Yeah, so what was the thing that we talked about that was, like, grabbed your attention the most? I know what I said, but there may be one thing that Brian said that was, like, the thing that really caught your eye.
Okay. I'm ready.
Go for it.
I think the one thing that I really was taking away from today was that idea of it was part of the prevention strategy that you mentioned. So the strengths and really talking to Tommy about what's great about him and maybe having the family say the one nice thing every day. I think that is I just think that's something that'll be really helpful moving forward. The aha moment really was that notion of, like, telling your children that, you know, I need help, I need your help, or, you know, we're struggling, to open that door for a stronger connection, because I think that we definitely need that. And so I think then, you know, as an action step, I like the idea of, you know, maybe having just a conversation as a family. I think that, like I mentioned, you know, before we jumped on the call, that when I'm putting the kids to bed, we always have kind of good night chats. You know, that's not really what they're called, but, you know, that it ends up being that as I'm putting each of them to bed, we say, you know, like, what was one of your favorite things today or whatever that was. And so I think, you know, maybe still doing that, but adding to it just a conversation, you know, whether it's at dinner or just another time as a family to do some of these things, whether it's something that we are saying that we need their help with or, you know, or some of those other saying the nice things, you know, so that everyone can walk away feeling good.
Yeah. How does that feel as tangible?
I think it's realistic. I think, you know, because it's not so far off from, you know, like I said, from what we're sort of already doing, it's just adding to it a little bit and, you know, kind of to use your word, sort of lasering in a little bit on some things.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it sounds like you've got a real life challenge that you can apply it to right now.
Yes.
Ryan, what about you?
So the thing that grabbed my attention was the idea of using Noah's transition to college as an opportunity for openness and transparency and just kind of everyone being okay and acknowledging that we're going to have emotions and things we don't know exactly how to deal with, but just let people know that's going on and just admit it instead of kind of ignoring it, and that we don't have to be in that you don't have to be perfect. You don't have to, it doesn't have to be exactly right. You're allowed to feel that disturbance in the force, if you will, or something like that, right? That's okay and that's normal. My takeaway was to really use that and then model for the kids, you know, especially the ones that struggle more with the executive functioning, but model how, just verbalize how we're processing or dealing with it. The action step is to kind of engage and solicit feedback. So it's a two-way street as we come to our decision-making process and kind of talk about what does our success plan look like as we transition back to school, and what does a successful schedule for the morning or evenings look like, and then how do I get a realistic, or how do I set myself as a success is to, I like the idea of having a meeting that just doesn't solve things, right? We're going to meet and talk about it, and we're going to come back and reconvene later and agree on a plan. That way people really have some more time to process through it, and we can, you know, have a little brief meeting, hear somebody go, oh, I thought about this, what about this? And those ideas may trigger later for them than they do in the initial meeting.
Yeah, love that. Love that. So what do you need to do to set yourself up for success, Brian?
Follow my plan. I mean,
okay.
Just get comfortable with, you know, really, really take the time and the moment, instead of being reactionary, just being reactionary, verbalizing however I'm reactionary or verbalizing what I've got going on, and sharing the process that we're all going through.
Okay, love that. Awesome. Great call today, guys. We are on again in 2 weeks. And there is next week, there's a Lifeline call on Thursday at noon, and we'll talk to you guys again on the 9th. Thanks very much. We'll be in school by then. That'll be like my first week of school. Can't believe it.
Oh, my goodness. Good luck.
Thank you. All right, guys. Take care.
Okay. Thank you.
Bye.